Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is someone who just bought an amazing necklace from Pookie McNally's Trinket Hut. It's Ooh. Megan Hoffmeyer.
I love it. It's got the little shells and the starfish all over it. And honestly, no, I take that back. It's got to have pineapples. I want to be a pineapple princess.
What would they call you?
Pineapple princess. They call me pineapple princess.
And also, if you ever get tied up, you can use it to cut your way out of anything.
That's true. Pineapples have all those little spikes all over them, so it'd be perfect.
Hey, Megan.
Yes.
We're an official couple.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, you don't need a book to explain it to you either.
Oh my God. You know what's... I'm so happy we're finally talking about this movie because we watched this last year in 2021. And also, I just want to give a shout real quick to David Cross of the Award Wieners Movie Review Podcast and Joe B. of the Ultimate Film Club. You can find both of them on Instagram. Wonderful pages. Excellent shows. But they were both early champions for this movie. And then that kind of, once we knew they liked it, David Cross messaged me and he's like, Mark, you got to watch this movie. Because I didn't even know this was released in 2021. It didn't get a theatrical release.
Nope.
I didn't see any trailers for it. And then we watched it and it was just, I had no idea what it was. And it was a beautiful, 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 beautiful experience.
And it looked like a lot of fun. And it went direct to streaming. So we picked it up. And honestly, we watched it during a time when we were dealing with some crazy news. And, you know, I was just having a few sad days. And we watched this show. And it really just brought me right out of my funk and just made this movie. And it made me so happy and just brought a little bit of joy back to my day. So I hope it can do that for other people.
Yeah, we just bought it. That was the only way to watch it. We couldn't rent it. So it was like $20, I think. And so, no, I think we rented it for $20. And then we just bought it immediately. And there's no looking back. We were Barb and Starites.
And we bought the soundtrack, too.
We have the pretentious vinyl soundtrack.
It's amazing.
But this is such a good, you know, watching this again and researching this again and listening to the commentaries and watching the documentaries and reading the interviews, I'm still amazed at how they were able to pull off the tone of Barb and Star. Because this movie could have gone many different directions. But, I mean, I guess you do have Kristen Wiig and Amy Mumlow, who were nominated for an Oscar for their screenplay for Bridesmaids. But this is a movie where everyone's totally earnest. They're in on the joke. It doesn't feel overly improv-y or loose. It feels quite like a tight movie. Like, they scripted this. There is some improv, but it's so weird.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the longest time, I thought this was an R-rated movie. And then I learned it was PG-13.
Oh, that makes sense.
I was like, I always just assumed it was R-rated. And so watching this, it just walked such a fine line of insanity, earnestness.
Silly, very silly.
Super silliness. But it also has an edge to it. And also, I was just looking through, we were just watching it real quick before we recorded. And I noticed that something interesting always happens almost every 20 minutes. So in the first 24 minutes, there's a big dance number at Vista Del Mar. And then at the 42-minute mark, which they say is the make-it-or-break-it moment for this movie, is Edgar's Prayer. Then when you get to the 60th minute, you get the montage, the Pineapple Princess montage, with
okay.
the slathering with sunscreen and the surfing.
Yes.
Just, and then also, this movie takes place where I grew up in Florida. And this must be Earth 818, not Earth 616.
It takes place there.
Because she jumps a mountain on a scooter.
Right. And there's mountains in the background. And they jump a cliff at the end of the movie. There are no cliffs in Florida.
Yeah. And there are hot alligators. But then at the 80-minute mark, you have the hot alligators and the culottes that act like a Mary Poppins-type umbrella that saves
Amazing.
Their lives. And then the 100th minute, we have Trish. Reba McEntire's
Trish.
Mermaid.
Trish is just the best.
So in their story, they were telling... So Barb and Star from Soft Rock, Nebraska. And they get on an airplane and they fly to Vista Del Mar, Florida. On the way down there, all they do is talk about a woman named Trish, who's the greatest human being alive.
Just a great gal.
But during that story, they talk about how Trish died. So they said that she
had skin cancer.
Yeah, she killed herself and she hit every single rock on the way down and she formed with the ocean. So is this Trish the mermaid?
Yes, it's definitely Trish.
So was that
she became a sea spirit and she's just amazing and magical.
So were they not riffing?
They were, and then it turns into something more, which is very much, I feel like, what this movie is.
It's kind of a magical realism type film because they work at what?
Totally.
Jennifer's Convertibles.
Yep.
And then they, inside, it's gigantic.
I remember Jennifer's Convertibles as a store. Do you remember that?
No.
Back in the day when big furniture stores were a thing?
It looked too fancy for me.
It's the type of place where you could sit down and have a cup of tea and sit on couches.
You know, in the deleted scenes, Barb and Star, they lose their job there because they...
The franchise shut down 7 months beforehand.
Yeah, and they just didn't tell them. Mm-hmm. But I guess in deleted scenes, it was them on mopeds driving around and just... Okay.
That's funny.
One more, like, there's a, you know what I didn't want out of this episode? When Norbert and I tackled Airplane, mm-hmm. I was really worried that that episode, which I love, would just become us saying the moments we love.
I love this. Yeah. I love that.
And so just at that moment, I almost just started naming off moments that I absolutely adore. But this movie is so chock full of them. In my notes, which they look like a madman wrote this. Like, if Nicolas Cage was a national treasure reading these for clues, he'd be lost.
Oh, but Nick Cage could figure it out. He's an expert.
Well, I guess he would just know that this movie's amazing.
On the Jennifer Convertibles thing, I think it's funny that the store manager didn't even know that they had shut down. So he has to break it to them that none of them knew they were shut down. It's not just Barb and Star being clueless in that situation. So that's kind of fun.
He didn't even know which one of them was working that day.
They didn't know which one of them was working that day.
They have their Thanksgiving dinners there.
It oddly makes sense for them. Do you think the rest of Talking Club comes in for Thanksgiving dinner?
No. Do you think they're friends like that?
I don't know. Some of them in Talking Club are a bit judgy.
Very judgy. What are the three rules of Talking Club?
Oh, the three rules of Talking Club are no swearing except the F word, which, love that.
Yeah.
No sneakers and no lying.
Why no sneakers?
Oof, I don't know. I mean, so here's the thing. They're quite accessory fashionable. Maybe that's why they're all wearing, you know, these matching outfits and they've got fancy big necklaces with medallions and things. And they've got all these earrings. So they're decked out ladies.
Turtlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
Horse saddles.
Oh, what did the one have on? She had on character socks to spice up her white uniform at the pharmacy where she shakes pills along to the music.
That's an insane scene. Talking Club sees unbearable.
It's funny how there's a bit about, what time is it? It's just on the dot. It's like 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. And she locks the door. And Gail is outside and can't get in. And then later there's a bit of knocking and she tells Gail to go away again.
Talking Club, that seems... I couldn't do it. I like Gail,
though. Talking Club seems stressful, to be very honest.
What's in hot dog soup?
It's a secret, I hear.
So hot dogs?
Definitely hot dogs.
They were kind of whitish beans?
Yeah, maybe some beans. Either like a pinto bean or, I don't know, a navy bean?
It looks like slop.
It does. It definitely looks like slop.
But that's all they make.
You know, it's probably a delicacy in Soft Rock.
I bet it'd be good.
It probably is. It's probably like, it honestly looks like this lentil soup that my grandma used to make in the crock pot, where she would put in hot dogs with it. And it just would sort of boil down into this big mush, but it was very tasty.
They always are. Hot dogs in a stew.
I mean, they're very salty, so they're bringing that to it. They've got that nice little meaty sort of taste going on there. They bring a lot of extra flavor.
Do you think they'll be making more than hot dog soup after this movie ends?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they've exposed themselves to quite a bit more in life at that point. They've gotten out of their town and their jobs and they've gone to Vista Del Mar. It's kind of funny. I read this interview with Josh Greenbaum, the director, and he said a potential sequel that he would have pitched is, get this, Barb and Star go very far to Mars.
They just wander their way onto a spaceship?
It's Fast and the Furious style where they're saving something. I don't know.
Barb and Star save the world?
That would be... I mean, they saved Vista Del Mar a mosquito epidemic. Sharon Gordon Fisherman wanted to kill everybody.
I was just thinking about this. Sharon Gordon Fisherman weaponizes mosquitoes, and mosquitoes have already killed billions of people through the history. I looked up how many people have mosquitoes killed, and it just said billions. So she's weaponized the most dangerous creature on this planet.
Literal bloodsuckers.
But you're not putting a rocket launcher on a three-toed sloth. You are taking a death-dealing machine and making it deadlier. It's like making a vampire. It's like making Blade the Vampire Slayer more bladey.
Just a bunch of deadly little flies after everybody.
It's like when Blade became the Daywalker, all the other vampires were like, crap, So now all the mosquitoes are like, crap, they're super mosquitoes. We don't need that in this world.
No, we don't need mosquitoes in this world.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. You ready for it?
Okay.
All right. So the director of this movie, Josh Greenbaum, who should get a lot of credit for somehow pulling off the tone of this movie totally. With the editors. You know, also, too, I just want to say, the cinematographer shot Fantasy Island, which is a movie we're going to be talking about on the podcast.
I saw that.
And
I was very excited.
The production designer, Steve Sackland, did Drag Me to Hell, which is the first movie we watched together.
It is.
Before we were an official couple.
Before you allowed us to be an official couple and let me tell everyone.
But Josh Greenbaum, though, he said that this movie is a coming of middle age story.
I saw that. That's hilarious. But it makes so much sense. And Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo, when they were in Groundlings together, they said some of their favorite characters, they never did a specific Barb and Star, but they loved to play middle-aged gals. So there were a lot of sort of bits about this that they'd worked on. And this is the first time they really put it out there.
And they put it out there.
Oh, they put it all out there.
They went inside. Edgar, no, like your heart. But
deep inside.
Deep inside. Now, give us a synopsis, because I always skip this on the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I never explain what the movie is when we start. I just get into it. So in your best, how would you explain this movie?
Wait, I thought this was now a Barb and Star fan account.
You're on your way to Mars.
Okay.
And you're sitting next to somebody, and you have to give a quick description of Barb and Star.
Okay, so.
Go to Vista Del Mar.
Two middle-aged ladies go on vacation for the first time. And save a small Florida town from destruction.
Yeah. From.
And find love. Both for themselves and for Star and Edgar.
And they have to battle a villain with Pigmentatia, Degenera, Hysterica, White Skinica.
Oh my gosh. And she has the best sidekick, Yo-Yo.
Oh gosh. You know, okay, we were talking about this. So we watched Top Gun Maverick and I will say right now that Top Gun Maverick features the best knob turning, button pushing, and switching in the history of cinema. I also want to thank the awesome people at the Last Action Heroes podcast because they made a poster of Top Gun Maverick that said best button turning and knob turning in the history of cinema, Mark Hoffmeyer. But I think Barb and Star's knob turning and button pushing and switching is the second greatest of all time, because Yo-Yo goes bonkers on it.
Oh, it's fantastic. So, you're right. In Maverick, the button turning and switching and all the things in the cockpit, they have a purpose, and they look natural, and it's great. You know, they're doing it. They're not just doing like, oh, what are we doing? It's chaos. No, it's good. This movie, they know that they're just being silly, and there's no purpose to these knobs and the minor adjustments to the steering wheel. And they just go for it, which makes it super fun.
He hits about 53 buttons and turns knobs during that sequence.
You know, Yo-Yo is just a cool guy. He's got all the dance moves.
Amazing. Okay, so this movie opens with Yo-Yo just singing and throwing newspapers out. It's wildly charming.
You know, he had never ridden a bike before and he learned on set.
What a perfect find for this movie.
And he's been dancing since age 4 and he just loves to do it. He'll dance for anyone, he says.
I mean,
Ren,
they asked a lot out of him for this movie, and he delivered. And you know what's wild? This movie doesn't open up with Barb and Star. They don't even get to Vista Del Mar for 24 minutes, but this opens up with Yo-Yo, and then it goes to Sharon Gordon Fisherman's Bond lair, where we meet Edgar, who just wants to have an official couple and a scientist, and we learn about the mosquitoes that are going to kill everyone in Vista Del Mar.
And she has a mouse orchestra.
And then she does the suicide blend with the lemon-infused iced tea. But that when you've never watched a trailer for this movie, when you've maybe seen the poster, and then this comes on, I just remember becoming best friends with this movie almost immediately. Just because of the mouse band, just Jamie Dornan sulking in the background, Yo-Yo being amazing. It's just such a odd opening. And then we cut to Barb and Star, Shania Twain, and them just moving their shoulders and tapping their, like,
oh yeah, they're you know, bopping along and they're tapping on their mugs and they're flicking their feet. It's great.
Why do people viscerally hate this movie though?
Really? Yeah. I mean, I haven't read a lot of reviews. I guess that maybe I should have, but I don't know. I don't want to read Barb and Star hate.
I mean, it's fresh. It's people love this movie. It's very fresh, but like on IMDb, it's 6.3 out of 10, which is decent, but it only has 17,000 reviews. And a lot of people just say, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
Gag me. But, so it's unapologetically silly is what it is. Josh Greenbaum wanted to make a silly movie from what he felt comedies were taking a turn towards dramedy. Like there was a lot of comedy with drama and real life things together. And he just wanted it to be silly. And I think that silly doesn't work for everybody. For me, I love silly. I love puns. I love all that kind of... This is sort of my wavelength, this movie. So it's probably just not everybody's cup of tea.
And it's kind of interesting. People say when this movie gets to Eggers' prayer, you either love it or hate it. So yes. We loved it.
The make it or break it moment. And we have talked to friends who have watched it, and they either, by that point, they're on board with the serenade that Jamie Dornan does as he runs through the beach and does pirouettes and sings at seagulls. And I've talked to people who were just really not that into it at that point.
I think you and I were lucky because we sat down and just absorbed this movie when we watched it. But this could be an interesting watch on, say, just a background watch. You know, you just put this on and come in and out. Yeah. Now that we love it, I mean, this could be on TV and we're like, oh, this bit's coming up. I'm staying to watch this scene. But I guess if you... some people just have the angriest reaction towards this movie.
That makes me so sad because this movie is just joy.
Yeah, it does nothing but just want to make you laugh. And also, too, it's got a bit of an edge to it as well. Like, there's some pretty bawdy...
Oh, there's some very dark things. So, if I don't know if you noticed, but Sharon Gordon Fisherman, in the beginning, in the opening you were talking about, she sort of unveils her plan and she's showing what she's going to do with these mosquitoes. Mind you, she wants to kill a whole town. I mean, that's not just, I want to make them sick or I want to wipe the town off and not, and be sort of ambiguous about what happens to the people. No, she wants to murder them all. Mm-hmm. But she does this test in her little lab on a cow. And then later, the cow's skin is on her chair.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Oh. That's some dark stuff right there.
And just the whole relationship, too, between Star and Edgar. Just the two of them together, some of the conversations they have. Like, they for it in this movie. And also, like, I'm also really impressed by Barb and Star because they see, you know, they're from Soft Rock, Nebraska. One's a widow, one's a divorcee. And you kind of think that they have never experienced anything. But the more we learn about them and how Star goes to Halloween costumes with only a diaper and she wins.
Essentially and, topless.
And how Barb dresses up as Bruce Springsteen. And then they drink... Barb, Star, and Edgar drink a gallon easily of wildly heavy booze.
It is the most elaborate fishbowl drink with a pirate ship and all kinds of things in it.
And then they pop drugs.
Yeah, it's the hidden treasure at the bottom of the drink. It's in a little treasure chest.
So they're tripping out of their minds, and then they dance all night, and then they have a wild fling in their room. Like, Barb and Star got edge to them.
They
like,
really
not,
do.
Yeah, like...
They're not... prude or sort of timid ladies. I mean, I guess they're timid in the fact that they didn't really leave their comfort zone of home, but they go wild.
Yeah, it's I love the little things that come in here, and they do just enough to make me love it. And just they're completely they're just completely sold on the idea of Barb and Star. They're just such weirdo. I don't know, the accents. I wish I could have been on set for this. I really do, because
yeah, me too. Down in Mexico, just on the beach, would be nice.
And everyone's like, oh, so hot. Like, I've been on 105 degree temperature where I'm just standing on concrete, getting hit from heat from both places. I'd rather be on sand.
Yeah, then we could go jump in the ocean, do some swimming with Trish.
Put me on the beach. But just watching, I want to see the tone. Because imagine extras seeing this movie. Just imagine anyone randomly stopping by to see the hair and the culottes and... You're just sitting there going, is this going to work? I bet you the whole time they're making this movie, they're thinking, is this going to work? Like, this is crazy.
I'm sure that, you know, we watched the gag reel, and they cracked each other up. I'm sure they riff at some points, but Yeah, you're right. They would have to be very committed in their roles while they were... It couldn't be everyone just laughing because it wouldn't work. And that has been said about the acting in this, that they couldn't sit there and do wink-wink about the lines they were saying. They had to be serious. Because otherwise you wouldn't buy it as an audience, that they were being genuine and they had all these feelings. I mean, Edgar is just an assassin. He's a really emotional guy.
He just... Oh, so Jamie Dornan said about him, he's like, he's a sweetheart and I love him. And he's just the nicest guy. He said, I love him. He's a sweetheart. He's pure and he's childlike. That just makes me very happy.
I read his wife said about him during the production of this movie, this is Jamie. These are the type of films he loves and wants to make. This sense of humor, which is so interesting because we really hadn't seen him in much like this before.
No, you're right. I think that's the trap of a lot of actors like Jamie Dornan, because he was a serial killer on a show with Gillian Anderson that he's really good in. And then he did all the 50 Shades movies. And you know what I like about him? He's like, I don't regret it. He's like, I made bank. My family's set for life and now I can do what I want. But people were like, hey, you're going to be typecasted in 50 Shades of Grey. He's like, am I going to play a billionaire who's like into like dominant BSM, BDSM? Like, no, of course not. But like, you know, Colin Farrell, right, with The Lobster. Colin Farrell in Bruges. Like, he started off as super serious. And then eventually everyone's like, oh, he's funny.
Love weird films with Colin Farrell like that.
Like Taylor Kitsch, I think, is funny. I think it took a long time. You know, you get these actors and then they put them in a box and then they eventually... If they're good enough, they break
free. They let them out of the box.
Yeah, if they're good enough, they break free. And I think that's what he did. I mean, he had this Wild Mountain Time, which we love.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, Christopher Walken doing a wild Irish accent. Emily Blunt doing an Irish accent. I mean, Jamie Dornan does have an Irish, Northern Irish accent. So he pulled that off. But it's weird. He's a bumblebee. And then...
But it is such an odd movie.
John Hamm pops
up. I adore it so much.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. And I think he's just really done a good job of kind of embracing another aspect and getting weird with it. But I think he's perfect. But he's such like a nice guy in this movie that I really dig. And also, you know, like Barb and Star in this movie, they don't have high school degrees. Like, remember, like, you didn't graduate? Oh, I didn't graduate either. Like, there's such, like, I don't understand these two, but you know, sometimes in movies when you have these characters, you know, it's really tough too, is when you think about some of my favorite movies, like Airplane, right? Mm-hmm. They are so dry in that movie. So Leslie Nielsen is playing it totally straight. Mm-hmm. Then you have just everybody else in that film, Lloyd Bridges, playing it totally straight. But in this movie, you have Kristen Wiig doing Midwestern accents with culottes.
All the culottes.
And then playing it straight. So they're doing characters who are playing it straight, which is kind of tough. Like, I think there's only been a few times I can think of, like, I think Mike Myers did a great job in Austin Powers and Dr. Evil, but he was winking at the camera a little bit.
Definitely.
This isn't winking. This is just really good acting.
It's very, I mean, they're earnest the whole time.
And in character.
And you believe the feelings that they're sort of portraying. You believe that Edgar is, you know, he wants to be in an official relationship, but then he finds Star and she's open to that kind of thing. And you believe this relationship that Barb and Star have together as friends. They very deeply care about each other, to the point where there's a scene where they had snuck out and have separate dates with Edgar and they lie to each other, but they both buy the ridiculous lies that they're telling about baby turtles that they encounter in different formats along the way, because they have this deep connection and you buy into their care for each other. It's very interesting.
And they probably never lied to each other. So then by telling mm-hmm. these sea turtle stories, they're probably...
You went to a turtle's house?
And then they show the turtle in the credits later on. Oh my gosh. But it's... No, I love their relationship. And you know, like... Yeah, I dig it. And I love Amy. I think in this movie too, I love... So I love Star's thing. You know, she has Edgar, but I think Barb, for me, is the hero, because her little surfing bit where she's surfing.
That's like she walks across the hot coals.
And then she rides a moped and jumps a cliff. And then she meets Tommy Bahama, who's Andy Garcia, just walking around and just slapping her on the head. But she has a really good angle, too, to her story.
Well, and she's the one who sort of tells off Sharon Gordon Fisherman, the villain at the end of the movie, before Star allows, you know, maybe we can actually all be friends. But Barb jumps to her defense and is like, no, not you won't treat my friend this way.
I feel like Barb could get stepped on, but if you mess with her friend Star, she'll go after you, mm-hmm. like a tiger.
Oh, tiger shark.
With big hair.
Oh, yeah, those wigs were something else.
And okay, so one more question. So there's all these tchotchke shops all around that Barb and Star... I mean, the world... everyone on the island's about to die, and Barb and Star are looking at buying necklaces, which is amazing. But if I had a shop, though... Do you want to hear my shop?
Yes.
So if I had to open one, it would be Mark Shark Art and tattoos, and forearm tattoos.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I would sell Shark Art, and then if you've seen Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 12 with Brad Pitt, I would do the same tattoo on everyone's right forearm. If they wanted it.
Oh, I like that.
Mark's shark art and forearm tattoos.
That, I mean, it's very you.
I almost got that tattoo. After I saw Ocean's 12, I saw that shark tattoo. And I've loved sharks we did that shark fin soup. And
we have a whole corner full of sharks in the room with us.
And at Florida State, when we were just becoming an official couple, I hand drew a shark fin soup animated thing. So I've always been in this, and I also studied sharks and how they get coverage in the media. We got our master's. I'm media and communication studies, so I studied the sharks and how shark attacks versus shark finning. I'm going off on a tangent, but I just love sharks. So yeah, I would do that. Shark forearm.
Oh man, what would mine be? Gosh, I feel like I'm not going to have a clever name, but I would want something, maybe like a, you know how we have King of Pops here in Atlanta? Yeah. Maybe like a popsicle cart.
Megan's popsicles.
What?
Meg's.
But see here. Meg's maybe the name is lackluster, but the popsicles themselves could have fun names.
Mo's Pops. Mopop.
Mopop. There you go.
Hey, I like Mopop. You can listen to a Battlefield Earth episode I did with them. Change your life.
Okay.
You'll learn a lot of good facts. So Mopops. What do you think? What kind of pops would you sell? Would you sell bald eagle egg? Pops.
Oh, no. We'd sell, let's see, pineapple, of course. The pineapple princess ones.
The Darlie Bunkle.
Oh my gosh. What was he serving at the buffet? Something along those lines.
He's so stupid in this movie, but I love him. Isn't he perfect? When he popped up, we were so happy.
Oh, I just love him.
Yeah? Damon Wayans Jr.?
The best.
I like his fight.
Go watch Happy Endings. It's everything. I like his
fight in the sand.
Oh, they're just, they roll around over and over. And the t-shirt, it's very 90s with a woman's bikini silhouette on it.
Oh my gosh.
Doesn't he have an umbrella hat on?
He does. Wait, you would sell astronaut cheese pizza pops.
Oh yeah. Can we talk about what Barb and Sara pack in their suitcases to go to Vista Del Mar?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so this is an insane scene, by the way, in which they pack. It starts out okay. There's some culottes. There's tangerine pants. There's fringy shorts. There's sandals. But then it goes off the rails.
They put a speedy fire-starting log in one of them.
Oh, yeah. Speedy flame. I like that there's this... She says pizza, but when she goes to pack the pizza, it's space pizza, like the freeze-dried astronaut stuff that you get at the Space Center.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But then later... One of them packs a trowel and says it's for the pizza. But you would never serve freeze-dried pizza with a pizza cutter of any kind because it's in hard bits.
I call that a packing fury. And you've seen me in that many times.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you, what ridiculous things would you pack?
Just what I bring from that they brought?
Yeah. Along the lines of their crazy packing.
Well, I bring my Deep Blue Sea DVD.
Okay.
Right? I would take, let's see. Okay, so that's pretty crazy. I would take a lawn gnome. I would take my Steve Zissou lawn gnome.
Makes sense.
Let's see. I would take candy cane Mentos.
Uh-huh.
Just because they're delicious. I would take, let's see, a mini Weber grill, just in case. Because you can put stuff inside the mini Weber grill.
That's true.
You can pack it. It's like, you can pack it, but then put stuff in it. Just in case you want a barbecue.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And then last but not least.
What would be your art from home?
My art from home?
Yeah, because Barb has to... She says you have to bring some art from home. And hers is like a little doghouse black.
Well, I would take my Life Aquatic scene. So I have a scene from Life Aquatic.
Mm-hmm.
I would take that.
That's a good one.
It's tiny. You mm-hmm. just plop it right in there. It's good. I'll do that. What about you? What would be in yours?
Oh, gosh. What would I bring that would be ridiculous? some cat toys to remind me of the cats.
You just bring a cat.
I mean, I would, if that would be okay. I don't want to hurt them.
In this world, they would live. There's talking crabs.
That's true. And the talking crab is voiced by one of our favorites.
Josh Robert Thompson.
Yeah. From Craig Ferguson's show.
I miss that show.
Oh, it was so weird. It was delightful.
Beautiful show.
What else would I bring? I would bring probably some of the biggest books ever. Just because, why not?
Yeah.
And, oh, there's a Dalek Yahtzee up there. I could bring that. It would be a game to play.
Well, yeah, you gotta bring your Doctor Who stuff.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some, I don't know, what's like a ridiculous pair of shoes? Maybe some, like, swim flippers. Never know if you're gonna need them.
Yeah, and a snorkel.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. Last thing, come on. You got it.
Okay, one more thing.
And our bathroom rug.
bathroom rug. No, a giant squishmallow to sleep with, for sure.
Oof. That would take up the whole thing.
You know, but they're very multi-purpose. You can use them as a pillow on the plane. You can use them in the car, wherever.
I would take hot dog soup ingredients.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, just make it in the sink when you get there.
Why does Barb and Star work so well?
Oh, I have an answer for that. So, Kristen Wiig saw Josh Greenbaum's film, Becoming Bond, when it premiered, and went up to him and loved the movie, said she felt like it really got her style and her sense of humor. And so she went up to him and said, I want to talk to you about making a movie. And then they set up a lunch. She called Annie and said, we have to talk to this guy. And he said it was the most fun lunch he ever had. And they decided to make the movie together.
Oh, wow.
From there, they decided that they wanted this to not look like other comedies. They wanted it to look cinematic. So they went and hired Toby Oliver, the DP from Get Out.
Yep.
Which is really fascinating. And then you had already mentioned the production designer earlier, Steve Sacklin.
Big name.
He was hired immediately. And what he brought were bright magentas and turquoise to the color palettes. But they were really inspired by how, you know how Wes Anderson movies have very, very deliberate design. They make their own typographies. They will make their own fabrics and whatnot. I don't know if they went that far in this. But when they made that comment about the production design, I could really see it. Everything is super intentional. The beds are shell-shaped. The shirts that everybody has in a scene are always coordinated with each other and with the things around them. Edgar, his shirts, I mean, they've got fish on them in some scenes. They've got little other tropical stuff on them. The necklaces that Barb and Star wear are very themed with what's going on around them. So it makes that sort of Wes Anderson very specific and deliberateness. It makes sense. Now, this isn't a completely cheeky context, but I get it.
You know what works, though, is this movie has a very deliberate color palette. So if you think about the corals, the blues, the, what, yellows, what else? Blue, yellow, red. So there's a lot of blue, yellow, and red in this movie. And then, you know what's interesting, since the guy also shot Get Out, that movie does some really interesting things with color. So in the beginning, the main couple in Get Out, they both wear denim to, like, look as, like an ideal couple. They're together. They both wear denim. They look the same. And then when they get to the house, I think Chris from Get Out, is that his name? Get Out? Let me look real quick. But so he starts wearing gray, and then she starts wearing clothes with touches of, so Rose starts wearing clothes with touches of red in it. And then that begins like their separation. And at the end, she's in those really crisp white outfits that's almost cultish. But they never do it, like, you never really notice it until maybe the third viewing. And then everyone at the party in Get Out, they're all wearing little dots of red everywhere. But you don't really notice that. So this DP, I guess, is really good at just shooting. Like, it's there. Once you see it, you're like, oh, okay, I see it. But it never feels overbearing. Does that make sense? Because some movies, I think, go too far. But this one, it's never distracting, the background of this movie. And I think that's credit to, like, the production designer, the DP, and everybody involved. And the costume designer, because everyone has to work together.
I think it was really smart because they went and got this very pedigree staff to make, like they said, not your typical comedy. They wanted it to look like something you haven't seen before. And they really pulled it off, in my opinion.
You know what's really interesting, too, is that when you think about most comedies, right? And I'm not bagging on Judd Apatow or any of these current directors. Well, I mean, Edgar Wright does add a flair to his films, but he's very different. But a lot of studio comedies, You know, it's just basically set up the camera.
They're kind of flat.
Yeah, and, you know, you want to get both eyes in the shot. Like Mike Myers says, you know, Mike Myers was supposed to do a Steadicam shot for So I Married an Axe Murderer, and he didn't want to do it because he's like, you need to see both my eyes. So they stopped and they just did over-the-shoulder shots so you can get the joke from both eyes, which I thought was pretty cool. But this movie, too, it's always funny. Amy Mamolo and Kristen Wiig, they kept talking about how much they were sitting in the commentary. And they do a lot of sitting, but it's really great-looking sitting, the way they frame it. Because they sit on their beds, they sit on the couch, they at home. Like, they're always...
They sit in Talk Club, they sit in Jennifer's convertibles, they sit on...
At the bar.
Yeah, they sit at the bar. But that I liked that one, that was a custom-built set for them to sit at, because it had to be wheeled backwards for the dance, the psychedelic dancing. But, and you know, I'd never thought about the whole sitting.
I mean, that's a good way to tell a joke, but also make it look good, if that makes sense. And then also... I mean, the production designer went out of his way making that lair for Sharon Gordon Fisherman. I mean, that's a legit Bond villain.
It's huge. It's impressive.
I think Kristen Wiig wrote, it's like a room with like some candles and it just looks kind of evil. And
in the script notes?
The script. And then they walked into it and it was absolutely beautiful. So it's just...
It's quite cavernous, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a big building.
And there's
on
like
the stage.
Some water features with a walkway, and it's got little... It's got the suicide machine rises up on a pedestal. It is not just there on a wall.
And even, you know, it's interesting too, even in the beginning when Yo-Yo's on his bike, if you look at all the trash cans, mailboxes, cars, they're all the color that goes throughout the movie, all blue, yellow, red. So you have the blue, yellow, red there. Then you have the blue, yellow, red at Vista Del Mar in the hotel when they're dancing, all the staff. It's like, you know what I love too? This sounds stupid, but you know how much I love Edgar Wright movies because every joke is written. But he'll write, a guy takes a drink of beer and he has a mustache. So he has two mustaches. It's like, hey, you got a mustache. Yeah, I know, because he has a mustache. Mm-hmm. Like, so you have to pull that gag off. And in this movie, they actually built a talking crab with two puppeteers under the sand to puppeteer it. Like, they had to build these gags. I mean, they wrote a gag with Reba McEntire as a mermaid. It's such a silly movie, but they built a crab so that Kristen Wiig can have a conversation with a crab who's Morgund Freeman. Like, it's really cool. Like, it's...
And there's a gag with, on the plane when they're sitting there, and there's an in-flight magazine. They have Don Cheadle's face on a magazine so that they can pull it out and pronounce his name with their accents. Don Cheadle. And the director had to go to him and say, are you okay with this? And they said he was lovely. But, that's planned for.
Exactly. Yeah, like, that's like what I love in comedy. Sometimes I think it's too easy to rely on a quick improv line or, hey, I'm going to sit you guys right here and you say funny stuff. Like, that's why this movie works, though, because I could keep going back to it, but Airplane, Hot Shots Part 2, Top Secret. In Top Secret, there's an underwater bar fight, which is I showed it to my students in film studies, and I'm like, what is this movie? I love it. I showed them the scene where you think it's a train moving, but it's actually the station that's a train.
Yes.
And so I love when jokes are tight. This movie... does have improv, for sure, but it also feels tight, if that makes sense. Like, it's a tightly written movie. I mean, you have to have hot alligators and culottes that make you fly. So it's
amazing.
It's, I don't know, I dig that. And they put him on harnesses, too. Like, when Edgar climbs up a palm tree, he's on a harness climbing a palm tree.
Slowly.
It's just, slow. And I don't know. It's one of those movies where it's not dumb. I think people are like, it's dumb humor. But I don't think people understand how smart it is.
It's very smart and planned for. I watched an interview where Will Ferrell, who absolutely adored this movie, interviewed Annie and Kristen and Jamie. And he said to them, this movie is amazing because it's all the things you want to do in a movie that most people tell you not to do. And you guys just went and did it. And that's, I think he was just sort of blown away by that aspect of it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just silly. And you know what's interesting? But Barb and Star never pandered down to. You watch some of these movies about the Midwest, and it just feels like there's almost disdain for the characters. Like, we're making fun of these people. But Barb and Star are these types of creations that nothing's being made fun of them. They are three-dimensional maniacs. And so...
You can tell that Annie and Kristen love their characters.
Yeah. And so this isn't a mean... slice of life Midwesterners are dumb thing. This is just a silly movie that's also really smart, written by two Oscar-nominated performers who are huge and they're hilarious.
So I heard that there were other guests staying at the hotel during the time that this was being filmed. Can you imagine what their reactions? So you walk out of your room and you see these crazy sets. What are you thinking? And these people with these accents, Midwestern, and just being, you're going, is this real? Is this what?
They probably were annoyed by it. Because imagine paying for a vacation and you have a film crew. Mm. Hey, you're in the frame. When you're paying to go to a resort in Mexico, you don't want to be told not to walk because they're filming a scene.
True. Or,
we can't go into the bar because it's closed because we're filming. I would riot.
They said that the dance scene, the Welcome to Vista Del Mar, 100 dancers.
That's amazing.
It was an old style. And that wasn't even planned for. That was, I guess Josh got carried away once they started the song. He wanted it to be an old school style, like, you know, throwback to the days of big musicals. And he sort of made it bigger and grander than ever planned.
So between In the Heights and this, we had two awesome dance numbers near water or in water.
That's true. Yeah, the pool dance scene.
I love that. Like, and just the way they go for it, and then they're supposed to be at the motel instead of the hotel. But actually, I was just thinking about this with hotels. I've shot in a few movies in hotels. And one time, when I was very early in my career, I got one of the worst jobs where I had to watch a bank of 6 elevators. Oof. And when everyone comes off elevators, they're talking really loud. So you got to catch an elevator, be like, wait, we're filming. And they're like, what? And you're like, no, we're filming. Like, quiet, 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 quiet. And then another one opens. You have to run over there. That was a nightmare.
Oof.
I think I needed some cheap blended scotch at the end of that one. And then I did another one where we had to watch like 50 floors. So we had to have 100 people on each side watching those things. And I was also dressed up like a peacekeeper.
Was that at the Marriott?
Yeah. So I was dressed up in a really hot character, wearing a cloak so no one could take pictures. And I was running up and down checking on baby PAs while guests were annoyed. Because when you leave a hotel, you're kind of in a hurry. You're not going to sit there and wait while people rappel from the ceiling. So that was... Shooting a hotel stinks. I'm just going to say it. But this was also during COVID. So
how many people were really at the hotel?
Yeah, you're right. It could have been the crew and a lot of extras.
Mm-hmm.
So that couldn't have been that bad. That way you just take it over. If you take over a hotel, beautiful. But yeah, if you have to deal with actual hotel customers, barf. I'm just saying.
Barf.
Okay. Also, too, there's a scene where they're at a talk club where they're just randomly talking. And the woman says, I like looking at wicker. Not sitting on it.
That makes sense to me.
You like looking at it?
Well, have you ever sat on a wicker chair? Most of them have pads.
Like just a wicker, like without a pad.
Yeah.
Well, who does that?
I mean, apparently you don't, because why would you if you could have a pad?
Have you, I'm messing, like, was it Adirondack? But those aren't wicker.
No, those are wood.
When's the last,
or plastic.
When's the last time we sat on wicker chairs?
We had a full wicker set in my porch growing up, so...
I can't think of the last time I sat on wicker.
We'll go find some.
I watched The Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage.
Well, you know, we're in Georgia and it's not very popular. I don't think it's not super sustainable. So we've got the wicker look nowadays, but it's made of other materials.
Plastic.
Mm-hmm. Or recycled.
Bald eagle skin.
Yes. Yeah. Endangered animals.
That's my least favorite joke of the movie. That's not funny to me. They're not that evil or dumb, Barb and Star. Like, oh, I'll take the bald eagle eggs. Like, that's not... But it is another world. This is a movie where mountains are in Florida.
This is true.
This is an alien race. You don't think so?
No, yeah. I mean, it's very possible because that is not Florida, as hard as they're trying to sell it. Although, I mean, that's kind of part of the gag, too. It's clearly not Florida. Unless maybe you've never been to Florida and you don't know what Florida looks like, but... We're from there, and we can tell you it's not.
It's where they filmed is exactly where I grew up as a kid.
Well, where it's set.
Yeah, where it's set. So I went to Hudson Elementary, Hudson Middle, Hudson High, and it's really just sort of country out there. There is a beach, and there is wealth by the water, but I would say the best resorts, you would have to go south to, like, the Don Cesar in St. Pete, or Sarasota, or Naples. Naples feels correct for this movie.
Yeah, there's a Ritz in Naples.
Yeah, so Naples feels right. And there's also very hot parking lots.
Or like Marco or somewhere that's very, you know, islandy.
Have you ever played solitaire in an empty pool?
Yes, last weekend.
Where was I?
Sleeping.
Wait, when? Is this in the middle? I get up before you. I get up at like 5:30. When do you, what?
We emptied the community pool.
We? You and the cats?
Yeah, no, me and the neighbors.
The neighbors?
Yeah.
How'd you empty it?
We drained it.
Leave you alone. I sleep really.
Yeah, you're out. You're a deep sleeper.
And you put in, you left a little tape. You left a pillow, like, started.
No,
like,
yeah, and I drew a face on it.
That scene where she walks in and Barb is just flicking on the lights, and then she's just totally fine.
You put a pillow there, and I laughed, because I thought it was funny, but then I wasn't sure.
What are your five favorite moments in this movie?
Okay, five. One, two, three, four. I'll have to come up with an extra one. Tell me. I only put four on my list.
Tell me your five.
Okay, the rope escape scene. I really adore it.
Oh, when they're tied to the chairs?
Edgar gets so lost in telling you his backstory that Barb and Star are trying to get out of their ropes that are binding them, and they're using their starfish best friend bracelets. And they just, every time he looks back, they're in a crazier position. It's fantastic.
And he lost it in the bloopers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he said when he received the gag reel at home after production, he was crying laughing.
They had a good time on this movie.
He said it was fun to make, and he was worried at first that it might be very technical and serious. Like, you know, we have to hit jokes and marks and blah, blah, blah in order to get there. But he just had the most fun. And that just makes me so happy because, like they said, this movie is the vacation we all need.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. All right. What's your second?
The plane chat and talking about Trish.
She lived a good life.
Trish, she was a good woman.
She hit every rock.
That's terrible.
How many rocks do you think she hit?
Oh, I mean, it depends on the cliff, I suppose.
Mile.
I don't know, hundreds?
Whoa. So she was just nothing.
Listen, they said she wanted to take her life herself, not let the cancer take her.
She had no skin left when she... It was just like spaghetti after it lands on the floor.
She made her goal then.
That's gross. She looked like Sam Neill from Event Horizon.
Anyway, lobby dance scene.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Welcome to Palm Vista. Just, wow. The colors, the dancing, the guy that shows up late at the end, who's off cue, the drinks, the tropical drinks. So much fun.
Beautiful. Huge moment. All right, what's next?
Talking club. It's just so odd. And the stuff they're talking about when, you know, the horse, the horse noises. And she brings her horse saddle inside, which means there's a horse tied up outside without its saddle. I think someone made the point so you can't steal it, which is just silly, but...
We were watching this movie with your parents, and they loved it, and your dad noticed the saddle.
He did.
Yeah. They loved this movie. All right, last one?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. This is, like, a lot of pressure.
It is.
What am I gonna do?
Do you want me to drop mine while you think?
No, I think, maybe the... Just... Oh, gosh, there's too many good moments. This is terrible. I hate this. Maybe I'll just throw Richard Cheese in there because we haven't talked about him yet. So basically, anytime he comes on screen and he's singing about boobies or his friends from high school who have recently passed, it's just hilarious in his sort of crooning.
Oh, I love him. And him singing Down with the Sickness by Disturbed is one of my all-time favorite covers. And this is a song about boobies. Boobies.
I just... So... It's not enough that there's a boobies song. There is a boobies reprise. And that is what really just makes it.
It's a great vinyl record we have. We need to listen to it more.
It's a real tit flapper.
Oh, that's my least favorite part. That feels like the bit in the movie. It's a real tit flapper.
Listen, Mark, it's a middle-aged film. What do you think middle-aged boobies do?
Flap.
There you go.
Jeez Louise. All right, number five. I love when they go into the motel. Oh. And the guy goes, no towels. And they're like, we would like towels. He's like, okay, well, no pillows. No pillowcases. Like, he's not trying to give them anything.
And there's a picture, a framed piece of art of a shark that has bitten off someone's leg. And there's blood in the water behind them.
It's insane.
It is insane.
All right. So this one's going to be a little bawdy. But there's a line in this movie where Star and Edgar are talking. And she's like, there was a moment when your dong was so high. It's so, you don't expect that in this movie.
Delivers it so genuinely. Like, she's not trying to be crass.
No, she's not.
She's just feeling emotional about it.
But you're just watching it and you're like, what? This movie is going for it. And it's absolutely beautiful. All right, so number three, I would say Darley Bunkle's fight with Edgar in the sand.
Yes.
Because they're just rolling.
They just roll over and over, which honestly, I hate sand, and that seems terrible to me.
It's everywhere. Okay, so I have two left. This is big.
It is. This is tough.
Oh, you know what it is? I'm going to say when Barb sneaks out of the window really goofily and then gets on the raft. Yes. She gets on the raft and then she pulls herself along and just lays there.
But she has like little swim hands.
Kristen Wiig said that the crew was laughing so hard during that scene and she wanted to look so badly, but she couldn't because she had to stay in character. Mm-hmm. But that's my number two. My number one's the jet ski action scene because you know how much I love jets. That was always the number one. But there's a jet ski action scene where Barb and Star are being chased by deadly mosquitoes on a jet ski.
And then they see their life flash before their eyes.
And then they're talking underwater with
bubbles.
Yeah.
Oh, communicating with each other.
But you know what I like too is they're actually on the ocean and Barb was actually cruising on that jet ski.
Oh yeah.
And then Sharon Gordon Fisherman shoots herself from a cannon, perfectly lands on them, and then she gets bit by the mosquitoes. Mm.
But she's taking the antidote.
And she just has red dots and then she becomes friends with everyone.
Exactly.
And then Yo-Yo shows up and they
all
party.
All she wanted was friends because her best friend is a little girl got eaten by
an alligator.
It's terrible. That's really dark.
They're on a swamp walk, like Tommy Bahama. I'm gonna go finish my swamp walk.
What's your other moment?
That's it.
Oh, that was it?
And then I love when he squeezes Barb's face, Tommy Bahama. He's like, and then he smacks her on the head.
Yeah.
And then she has armpit hair all of a sudden.
I liked in the commentary when Kristen watched Annie get bopped in the face and she goes, that was a real smack. And Annie goes, yeah, it was.
Listen, Annie Garcia sells.
Yeah, he does.
You don't mess with him.
He's in character's method.
Is there anything else you want to cover before we get out of here?
Oh, yes. So something fun that I found out in the Will Ferrell interview was that I guess during the production, Barb and Star or Annie and Kristen would randomly drop bits of backstory that wouldn't make it into the movie, like stuff that they had thought up. And it was just too crazy for the movie or too weird. And this was one of Jamie's favorite parts of making it. They would just tell little bits about their backstories as characters. So do you want to know how Barb and Star met?
How?
They met in the shower at the Y and they were chatting a lot.
That sounds about right.
That's how Barb and Star met.
That sounds about right.
I just love that little tidbit.
And poor Ron Quicksilver. Didn't they say he was special? He was so manly that they said that there was something chemically off about him.
Oh gosh.
But like this is a weird movie with this is a weird mermaids.
Mm-hmm.
Barb jumps quarter mile.
Multiple dance scenes.
Talking
and
mice,
musical numbers.
Killer mosquitoes.
Oh, the mice.
What world do they live in?
Not this one.
You know, Sharon
You're Gordon, right, magical realism for sure.
Sharon Gordon Fisherman survives a probably 2 mile long cannon shot into a Disney cruise pool.
Well, wasn't it dialed back to baby or something?
No, because they went probably kill you. And then they
put it all the way up. I like the speeds on the cannon.
Oh, baby. And then
Shrimp Queen, which is only in the middle.
I couldn't go to that festival. I'd die.
Seafood Jam?
Yeah.
You know, that I actually meant to bring that up. That is a very Florida thing, to have a seafood festival.
I mean, what's the huge one that everyone goes to?
There's one on the East Coast that my parents go to every year.
Yeah, and they get oysters.
Yeah, fried oysters. Or fried shrimp.
I can eat oysters.
They're delicious.
I just can't do shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
Or sardine. No, or
anchovies.
Jeez Louise. I mean, that's no loss. I mean, maybe on my Caesar sometimes.
Or your pizza.
Would you watch Barb and Star go to Mars?
Yes.
Mars?
Barb and Star go to Mars.
Oh.
No, it wasn't that. It was Barb and Star go very far to Mars. I need it.
You know, I have no problem saying it like that, but when people want me to say Emily and Perry, I'm like, I can't do it. It's just Emily and Paris. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Emily and Perry. But I like Emily and Paris. Emily and Paris.
What accent is that?
How would Emily do in the Barb and Star world?
I think she'd be totally into them. They've got crazy accessories. Emily loves fashion.
They need a crossover.
That would be insane.
And then they go back in time to the Bridgerton world.
Oh, gosh. That's too much.
Barb and Star in the Shonda Rhimes show.
There would be a lot of walking and talking.
How would Barb and Star do in Ozark?
they'd probably become the criminal overlords.
They'd kill people. I think Barb would kill somebody.
Yeah, probably.
Barb is...
For each other.
Yeah.
Barb... Not for cruelty.
Star would do it, too.
Oh, for sure. She gets real tough.
I'm worried. They'd be bad. Ruth would love them. What about Euphoria?
What is happening?
They'd be parents.
Oh, gosh. In Euphoria? I just really can't picture them in Euphoria. It's too something.
You got lost there. I like the look on your face.
I get very disturbed by Euphoria.
Well, thank you for... This is good. I'm so happy we got... This is a perfect movie.
We have been talking about covering this for forever.
And we finally did it. We've been kind of so busy. Pleased. This is perfect. What's next?
Either Ghost Ship or Hurricane Heist or...
Ghost Ship, because you love that movie.
I just... There's certain parts of it.
All right. And also John Pogue, who wrote that movie, also directed Deep Blue Sea 3. And you can hear our interview with him on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. We interviewed him twice. He liked us so much.
Mm-hmm.
He said I ask him weird questions.
That sounds like you. Nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well, this is fun. Thank you for joining me.
Anytime. Let's talk about Barb and Star. We're going to take over the podcast and it's going to be all Barb and Star themed.
The Barb and Star Minute.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. 111 episodes. What do you think?
I am into it.
All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Megan Hoffmeyer, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks, and we'll see you next week.